Hello world, it's the Clue Phone, and it's for you.
Lord have mercy, look up, I'm in that place again. Without you, I don't know which way to go. Keep riding round in circles, a journey without end. Keep learning things that I already know.
Everybody, this is Reverend Jim with the weekly broadcast, Dream World, where we discuss dreams, symbols, and the way that they tell us the world is operating. I apologize, Deacon Jay can't be here today. He's off called to other duties. So it's just me, my trusty guitar here, and the microphone. And there were a lot of things that I wanted to cover last week, but they weren't available because I made mistakes and we'd go back and edit. And I'm sure you noticed the very poor vocal and sound quality of last week's broadcast, but it was on the fly. We both had about an hour to do it. And so as a result, it wasn't exactly what we wanted for our initial broadcast, as this one won't be either. Because it's just me winging it solo today. But let's talk about what the goal of what I'm up to is. And that is a sort of a world awakening. You know, they say we're going from the age of Pisces, the fish catcher, you know, the twin fishes under the water. And it's real interesting because we're all given symbols throughout the course of our life. And some of the symbols are very universal. We, according to Jung, and last week we did do a section on who Jung is and why I'm so big a fan of his. But basically, he was a contemporary of Freud's. As a matter of fact, they knew each other. And Freud discovered the existence of the unconscious, and Jung went in and mapped it for us. Freud, from what I've heard from people more in the know than I, wanted to make his particular problems everybody's. And Jung was kind of in, unbiased and sort of just let the problems be and find out what they are. But basically, if we're moving from the age of the fish under the water to the water bearer, symbolically, that's very, very interesting because in your dreams, you'll discover all of your unconscious behaviors and things that you don't know about yourself are things that come from under the water. It's our unconscious. The water line is our conscious-unconscious line. It's the line of Tao, if you will, if you're along the lines of a Taoist. But basically, I have followed several religions to the center, and believe me, any religion can get you there. It's a question of the one that appeals to you, and you'll find me periodically wandering off on tangents about other faiths and stuff like that, and quite frankly, it's time we get over the taboo of talking about religion. It's time to be able to discuss what somebody believes and why they believe that and just be able to examine it. I don't necessarily think that you believe a religion because it's true. I think you believe a religion because it helps make you a better person. And that's the key ingredient here. You know, you can have a savior in the form of Buddha or a savior in the form of Christ. What a savior is someone that convinces you that personal change is possible, that you can start to overcome the demons that we all have inside of us. For Christians, I saw a bumper sticker the other day that kind of sums up my problem with Christianity, and it said, Christians aren't perfect, they're just forgiven. And that's sort of an incentive to quit trying. You know, we are forgiven our sins, but we were also given the admonition to go and sin no more. Well, I, for one, personally had a very difficult time with that go and sin no more stuff because, quite frankly, I wasn't conscious of all of the things that come up in me. I tend to be a little overweight and sluggish. And so as a result, sometimes when I'm doing something, I have to get mad to get the energy to do it. So if you want to go via the Jungian approach to this, then Mars takes me over for a minute so that I can get the energy to get up and do something. Well, all of these demons are coming in constantly, and it's a question of recognizing when you got them. If you want the pure, 100% true God, he's right in the middle of all of this. But when you are experiencing behaviors that you're unaware of that come back around and you go, what happened and why did I do that? And start noticing the patterns of where you are, what you're doing, and when they have you. This is an approach to the world that is backwards from everything you've ever been taught. You need to roll back your idea that the way to affect the world is to get out there and punch somebody in the nose or do something. The way to affect what the world is presenting you is to get to know yourself better. There are at least two of everybody. And the more you're aware of the other you, there's a real good book on the subject called The I and the Not I. I'll look that up for you. I need to find out who wrote it and tell you. But let's go back to when you're just a little bitty child and you want to reach for something that your parents don't want you to have. It's either dangerous for you or you might screw up something that is, you know, more valuable than your feelings to your parents. So you get a slap on the hand. Well, there's a reaction at that point. One of you wants to go, oh, okay, I won't touch it, and I'll comply with my parents' wishes. And one of you has an egotistical sort of, who are you to tell me what to do and what I can and can't touch? Well, one of those feelings becomes more conscious, and one of them sort of gets buried through the course of time. And then through getting constantly hammered on by life in that manner, there's a you, and then there's a you wish you could have been, and all of the dreams and hopes and negative things about yourself that over the years you've trained yourself to repress. Repression is different from integration and being able to use them. Everybody's got a nasty side to themselves. Can you discriminately use it is the question. Can you only break it out when necessary, or do you find yourself being that thing when you don't really have any grounds for it? So this is a quest. After you've been forgiven, it's time to get off the situation and start working on the go and sin no more. This is a furtherance of any religious tradition. It's time to start looking at our monsters. Sometimes your monsters can become more prevalent if you're under the influence of drugs or alcohol. That's one thing that you'll discover is that if you start paying attention to dream symbology, if the water's real high and bouncy, that means your unconscious is trying to break out with something. And when you're unconscious, it's easier for your monsters to come to the surface and inhabit your body and make you do things that you regret at a later time. And then you have to figure out what happened there. And the process of getting these things out of you is one of the quests of the dream world. If we get all of these monsters to the forefront and learn when we have them and learn to discriminately use them, we won't become president of the United States and start a war because we're mad with somebody who didn't even attack us. The fact of the matter is, it's time to start reeling in our monsters. It's time to quit hitting people in the name of our emotions. It's time to reel it back in. It's time to get more real. Now, I'll tell you from the get-go, like I said before in a previous broadcast, or the only previous broadcast, I am occupying a position I call with the Church of the Meek, the false prophet. I'm pointing the way, but quite frankly, one of the first tenets of the Church of the Meek is don't follow leaders. There's something intrinsically wrong with somebody that wants to be a leader. I was given this job, and I'm in it reluctantly, and I'm spending things that I don't have to do it. And incidentally, if you'd like to help me out with that, I'd sure appreciate that. And the address is on our website at www.thechurchofthemeek.org. Appreciate any help somebody can give me if you think that sanity needs to be turned loose in the world. But it's time to quit killing people in the name of God, and it's time to quit thinking that I'm getting to heaven because I believe this and you don't. And it's time to quit insulting other religions. It's time to quit insulting other traditions. It's time to understand that everybody has a point of view. God is one mountain, and there are many paths to the top. But I firmly believe that the attitude of man causes everything that happens to man. I think our attitude right now, collectively, has been ruined by fundamentalist religion-type people. And I'm talking about Islam, I'm talking about Christianity. When you've got a point of view that you think is the only point of view, that's absolutely ridiculous. God wouldn't be that vain or that cruel. You've got to settle down into your groove and understand that the first message of Christianity is, I'm a sinner and I can't do anything about it. Now, there are several things that follow from taking that Christian view. And one of them is, don't follow leaders. Your leader's going to lead you astray every time. Anybody who wants the power over people has something intrinsically wrong with them. And if the ideal form of government were in force, what would happen would be, anybody declares for office, we go over and arrest them for being megalomaniacal. The fact of the matter is, people need to leave other people alone. Heck, government's gotten so intrusive, you don't even own your property anymore. You're just renting from the government. I guarantee you my taxes are more than my dad's principal interest taxes and insurance were. The government wants more every month. The government wants more every year. We got four kinds of government that want more every month, and they want it at a rate that's a little bit more than our paychecks are growing. And it's time to get off the free ride and vote your heart. Quit voting for Republicans. But that's another tangent. Here's the scoop. You need to start paying attention to your dreams, because your dreams will give you the symbols you need to extricate yourself from the situation. If you work on what's internal, what's external will change, because your unconscious is in charge of your magic. It's in charge of who you meet. It's in charge of the luck that befalls you. So when you start making your unconscious happy, then you start making your life happy. Your unconscious is that monster little kid that's in charge of, hey, I'm back here and you made me forget everything about existing in you. Well, it wants to exist in you, and it's going to exist in you either when you let it or when it gets enough power to take over. So it's time to recognize it's there. It's time to start bringing our demons back home. It's time to quit killing people in the name of God, because I honestly believe that our bad attitude towards each other is actually the root cause of our bad weather, our bad luck, our bad job, our bad attitude. It's time to change what's going on with our internal monsters, and it's time to recognize that the way to make the world a better place is to be a better person. I'm not going to be one of those pie-in-the-sky, by-and-by kind of preachers that talks a good game on Sunday and tells you how pious he is and then goes out during the week and gets caught doing nefarious things. I'll tell you right now, up front, I started off trying to be scared in every aspect of my life. The reason for that was I was raised in a situation where on occasion I feared for my life from my father. And it may or may not be him, you know what I mean? Escalating it, there's no doubt about it in my mind, but it's real hard being terrified when you're too young to remember. And when you're terrified, it's real hard to know that you're terrified because you've always been that way. And as I said in a previous speech, it's real hard to see something that you've been inside all your life from the outside. But through the course of these things, I've created some very horrible monsters, and I had to extricate them. My blessing was I knew immediately there was something wrong with me. Maybe it started from the perception that if you're a beaten child, you have some sort of suspicion that you deserve it. And I understand thoroughly. I was raised a Southern Baptist, and I understand thoroughly what being a sinner is. I am a sinner. I can hide my motives from myself. I can delude me. And so I don't trust anything I do unless I'm doing something good for somebody else and not even letting anybody know it's me. Hence what we're up to right here. You'll hear me as Reverend Jim, and you may never find out who I am because I'm doing this on the cuff. I'm doing it on the sly. And at any rate, I'm getting too old to have any dreams of glory from this. I just need to get something out there to make people start thinking about their own monsters and start reeling their own stuff in like I did. It's rough being nuts. It's better being nuts when you know you are. And I'm not holding myself up as any example except for the fact that if you take charge of it, pay attention to your dreams, start reeling them in, God will bring you home. And ask and you shall receive. One of the problems with faith is people get raised in a church and they've never seen anything outside that box. And so as a result, when they're confronted by a different opinion, by a different religion, by a different approach, then they're in the same box of confusion I was as a child. I needed God desperately in my life. And the only way I was going to get God was to find him, because when I was about 11 years old, my only clue that you could be male and not be a jerk at about 11 years old was my grandfather, and he died. And that is... let's talk about dream symbols, because a whole lot of the Bible is written in a dream symbol. Let's talk about Genesis and us in the garden as children. We are Adam or Eve in the garden as a child, and we're perfect and everything is swell. Well, the apple is the fruit of knowledge. And what is the knowledge? The knowledge is an awareness in a very real and personal way that we're on God's hit list and we're not going to make it out of here alive. Now, this typically comes about puberty, as it did with me, about 11 years old. It's your first death and change of personality into another human being. You go from being the child that's in the Garden of Eden and everything's magical and wonderful to, boy, things are weird and I'm not who I used to be and what is going on here and who am I? Because I've let go of who I thought I was. I had to. So... then you're booted out of the garden, and at the same time you're hitting pubescence, you're also discovering that you're mortal. Well, that affects people depending on the cause of what made them discover their own mortality, and it can be a close call. They can get real sick or have an accident. It can be a good friend or a relative dying, somebody that lets you know this isn't a real permanent situation here. But when you get tossed out of the garden, you can have two reactions. You can have a reaction of fear or a reaction of anger. One of them is conscious and one of them is unconscious. If you become afraid, like I was, then you will become immediately like a soul person. You will intuitively know what's going on with people around you because of your fear. Your fear lets you know what kind of mood people are in. your fear lets you get the tone of the situation because you're afraid and you don't want to mess anything up and run the risk of whatever you're afraid of. And quite frankly, that was one of the big, what are you afraid of? Well, I don't know. I was afraid of everything. I was just afraid. Well, you've immediately got soul if you get that far afraid. But I desperately needed God because of the fact that if there was no point to this, it was going to be real hard to finish it. So I started looking for God when I was about 11 years old, and I joined the Church of the Month Club. I've learned as much as I can about any religion that's ever published anything because I was looking for God. And somewhere between Taoism, Christianity, and Buddhism, I probably got tossed into the middle just out of my sheer desperation of my prayer. And so when I was about 23 or 24 years old, I hit the middle of everything. I was absolutely one with the universe, and anybody that's been there knows exactly what I'm talking about. And there are people that have been there. And when you reach that equilibrium where all of your demons are completely equally distant from you and you're hooked into the power source in the middle of the universe, then everything is perfectly clear to you. And when everything goes perfectly clear to you, you understand that about 90% of religion was invented by people who have never been there. They invented it for the purpose of making an income off of people who are desperate for God. Well, here's a clue, folks. God talks to you every night, and you have just been trained out of listening. It doesn't seemingly affect what's going on at work or where you're going in life, but you get a dream stream every night. And it's information that is valuable to you in your life. Sometimes it's precognitive and telling you about things that are fixing to happen. Sometimes it's about your monsters. Sometimes it's about things that are going to happen to somebody you know. It's wonderful information. It makes you feel alive and cradled by the hand of God to start taking notes and paying attention to it. And people come to me all the time and go, Reverend Jim, I don't dream. Well, yeah, you do, but you have trained yourself out of taking notes and trained yourself out of paying attention for so long that your unconscious is looking for other ways to remind you. And when your unconscious is looking for other ways because you're not paying attention to your dreams, that's when your life starts to seem accidental. And it's not accidental. Everything that happens has a purpose. It's running you into a place where you need to be to take the next step. And sometimes the plan to get you where you need to be is take two steps back before you can take three forward. But there is a plan. If you start paying attention to it while it's a dream and trying to make the changes that are being encouraged in you by your dreams, then you'll discover the road starts getting smoother. So here's the first step I would like any of you novice people to the world of paying attention to your dreams to do, is get a spiral notebook and a pen or a piece of paper, whatever. Set it on your nightstand, and when your dreams come, if you remember any of them, start writing them down. Date the date you had them on the notes. Write every bit of information you possibly can down about the dream. And go back and read them periodically, because you'll discover that there are things about your dream that were telling you what's coming. And as you get more adept at discovering what was sent to you in a dream, you'll discover that you're more adept at getting the information out of the dreams that you're having right now. So give the unconscious a message. I'm going to start paying attention. Our collective unconscious is linked directly to God. And our unconscious mind, all over the world, everybody dreams in the same language. There has to be a reason for that. Well, at any rate, back to the story of getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden. Well, if you're an unconscious anger person and a conscious fear person like I was, when I go into unconscious moments, like when I'm real drunk, I become real angry because Conscious fear is unconscious anger. And my dad was very, very good about converting fear into anger. Later on through the course of life, Dad and I became very, very good friends, and it became real obvious to me from talking to him the reason he was so angry when I was a child is because he was so scared. He was absolutely, completely thinking that the world had him outclassed and he was outsmarted, so he had to make up for it with belligerence. Well, he didn't, and he was plenty smart. He just paid attention to the wrong stuff. And when you're trying to affect the world, and he did a remarkable job of affecting the world, he absolutely changed his circumstance into a house of cards that was an amazing thing to watch. But he didn't do any internal work. Now, I did exactly the opposite. We sort of split things up, and this is when I got my religious awakening and when I got first moved into the center, is when I discovered that Dad and I were in a symbiotic relationship. He took all the anger. I took all the fear. He took all of the work. I took all of the fun. So we kind of had to divide things up. Well, during the course of me dreaming and discovering all about the various dynamics of things, I discovered I was in a participation mystique with my father, and I took some of the good stuff, and he took some of the good stuff, but we took all of it. He couldn't enjoy a free moment his whole life, and I couldn't have anything but a free moment my whole life. So as I became more aware of these things, I started reeling it in, and he started being able to have more fun, and he started lightening up a bit as I became more aggressive. So this is the culmination of years of trying to become aggressive for me. I'm not a very aggressive person, and that is the basic problem with peaceful people. It's very, very hard for peaceful people to seize control of the world, because peaceful people are, generally speaking, those of us that have been introverted in examining our own behavior, and that's why we're peaceful, is because we've discovered, as the Baptist would say, we're sinners. As I would say, we're wired funny and can't help some egotistical approach to anything we do. But I'm going to try and keep ego out of this. I'm going to let you know that I'm not a Jimmy Swaggart holding yourself up to you as holy and then going out and messing up. I'll let you know right now I mess up on a regular basis, and I've done it all the way through my life. And I think this next thing I'm fixing to do is kind of bizarre, and let me tell you the story about it. Just a second here, and let me get my guitar. I had a good friend, maybe I still do, I don't know, we haven't communicated in a long time, but we used to play the blues together. We'd show up at the same parties, and we dearly had a love for the same old blues chops and that sort of thing. And but at any rate, my friend wrote a song about drinking, and he gave me permission to do it. And he hasn't rescinded permission yet, but the song is about drinking. And when I'm through playing it, I'm going to go ahead and let you know the story about it.
Looking through a bottle, got my world all in a haze. Looking through a bottle, got my world all in a haze. I feel so fine at night, but I drag so through the day. Traded in my lover down at the liquor store. Traded in my lover down at the liquor store. You know that's 100 proof that I best not drink no more. I used to have me a good job with good hours and good pay. Said, look out for me, world, you know, which here I gotta stay. But I was late so many times from getting loaded the night before. The boss man told me, son, don't bother come round here no more, 'cause you keep looking through the bottle. Got your world all in a haze. I feel so fine at night, but I drag so through the day. Been looking through a bottle, got that same old point of view. Looking through the bottle, got that same old point of view. When you're looking through that bottle, there ain't nothing you can do.
Yep, pretty fine old blues song there. That's down like it ought to be. And the buddy of mine that wrote that, quite frankly, in case you can't tell from the sincerity of the lyric, is a lot like me in that he will crawl into the bottle on occasion.
Well, that song has become one of my fondest memories of him because I sort of lost contact with him because of my propensity to fall in the bottle myself. We used to play an open mic up in North Austin, and I don't know if any of you are familiar with what goes on in Austin for musicians, but the difference between a giant pizza and an Austin musician is one of them can feed a family of four. Well, at any rate, we did this open mic up north, and my buddy came into the club with a new girlfriend of his, and before he went up on stage, he bought my wife and me and his new girlfriend a drink, and then walked up on stage to play the harmonica. And just in case you're curious, this guy is God's reason that the harmonica was invented. He is absolutely a blues harp player extraordinaire, in case you can't tell by the sincerity of the blues song I just played for you. At any rate, he bought the drinks and went up on stage, and I looked at my wife and said, wow, his new girlfriend must be really, really good for him. I've known him for 30 years hanging out in bars, and this is the first time he's bought me a drink. Well, his new girlfriend kind of overheard this, and incidentally, the only reason I know this is what happened is because my wife told me later. I do not have recollection of it because I was that far in the bottle. And his new girlfriend overheard me say that to my wife, and she didn't get the point that I was saying that she was making him feel special. What she recognized in it was, he's that cheap? And I immediately kind of got irked over the fact that that was the message that she received from hearing that. Well, when she got up to go to the bathroom, I told my wife, hey, this isn't going to work out between them. She's a money-grubbing B-I-T-C-H, and he's the cheapest guy I know. So at any rate, when she came back to the table, I told her that, and that was evidently the wrong thing to do. And she, about 2 years later, they broke up, and she proved my confidence in her character by causing as much pain as she could on the way out the door. So she told my buddy that I called him the cheapest guy I know. And so as a result, he hasn't spoken to me since. At any rate, if somebody needs a really good blues song or a really good harp player, get a hold of me. I'll try and put you in touch with him. He's absolutely the best in the world at playing the blues. Let me get back to the story here. Well, in case you can't tell by the sincerity of the blues lyric there and the fact that I crawled in the bottle to alienate my friend, it's very, very difficult, you'll find, to forgive something that you yourself do. I have a hard time forgiving him, and my problem there is
that he was all too ready to believe anything bad about me. We've had several instances over the last 15 or 20 years where he decided there was something untoward about me. And quite frankly, sometimes there is, in case my story didn't evidence that for you. But everybody has moments when something else takes over, and he's had his. So at any rate, I just wanted to say hats off to the guy. He's been a bright spot in my life, and I hope some good comes of this for him. I hope that I can make amends to him at some point in my life. But like I said, I'm a sinner, and I'll delude myself as to my own motives. I will try and remain blameless when I am absolutely the root cause of everything that's going wrong. My first memory in life is kind of an allegory for my entire life. I was on Redbud Trail in Austin when it was a caliche road, and I mean, not an ounce of asphalt on it anywhere, and I'm kneeling down on the road picking up little rocks, and I have an orange soda water, knee-high orange, and I'm throwing rocks in my soda water and crying because it's got rocks in it. And that pretty well sums up my life, and I think it sums up a lot of people's lives. We're creating our own situation, and then we're crying because we don't like it. One of the things that I would like to do during the show on a periodic basis is several people have written in with specific questions about specific dreams. I try and be a little more general than that, but if you do have a symbol that's bothering you, there's a thing we're going to do. If I can get Jay here, I'm going to take him through it, and we'll try this next week. We're going to try an active imagination. I will show you a place where you can get your unconscious and you to work together on your dreams. You can dream right back to your unconscious and ask questions that way. You can pray for dreams and they'll come to you. You just got to have a little faith and take the risk. And if you pray for a dream on a subject that's bothering you, you will get it. If you have trouble understanding the symbols, you can ask for a clarification dream and you will get it. Just remember, it's a two-way street. You can dream, and you can dream right back to your dreams, and start a dialogue between the two yous and start working on becoming one person again, or as the Zen master says, put on your original face. But as I said, I don't like to get into specifics about dreams, but sometimes there are some that people ask, and they've asked me in a manner that I can't get back to them, no return address or something like that. They send letters to the P.O. box. Incidentally, if you do want to get a hold of us and send something in for our perusal, it's P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas, 78619. The Church of the Meek. Our website is www.thechurchofthemeek.org. If you like what we're doing here, I'd appreciate it if you'd become a nominating or a voting member. All you have to do is do it once, and it's a gift that keeps on giving. Some of the things that we're doing are published on the website. Our first month of giving the funds away went to the American Red Cross. This month it's going to be Cal Farley's Ranches. So at any rate, if you have an idea where you think we can make the world a better place, please send it in to us. It doesn't matter whether you're a nominating member or not. We'd just like to have your help if you're going to suggest what we do with the money. At any rate, let me get back to the line here. I said I wasn't going to do anything or didn't like to do anything with regard to specific dreams, but I had one from Amy, got no last name on it. She asked about flying in a dream, and my experience with flying is it comes from a sense of elation over an accomplishment or something that you've done that just really gave you an element of joy, but there is an admonition to a flying dream as well. There is a strong potential, in my experience, for a flying dream to make you say that you're not grounded on the subject, that possibly you have overreacted to what this accomplishment or this elation or this situation is going to do to you. So there is something really, really positive going on, but there's also the potential that it is exaggerated. So keep an eye on yourself. Be sure that your elation hasn't caused you to lose touch with reality or made you think that this accomplishment is going to provide things for you that it's not. Another question I got this week was basically they wanted to know, in spite of what I claim as a religious understanding and background, that I seem to have hung out with outlaws and people in illicit activities and things in my past from some of the stories I've told. Well, I explained earlier that I needed God desperately, and I launched about a 12-year quest to find him before he found me. It's really strange, but it's always backwards. It took me a while to get desperate enough for him to see me. But when I was in that state of consciousness for the first time, where I was one with everything that's going on, I did at the time realize that I could meditate myself off the planet. I could actually choose to die and do it. And it wouldn't matter, and the world would be perfect with or without me. But at the time, I just had this sense of elation and the realization that in maybe some small way I can influence another person to be able to find that spot. And so I took what I've later discovered might be the vow of the Bodhisattva. I'm not going to delude myself into thinking I'm of that quality. But I was there, and I decided to leave, and one of the things that made me leave is that I think I could have an influence on somebody else. Believe me, it would have been a peaceful, quiet, beautiful death. But I decided to not go. And once again, that might have been my fear. But the vow I said at that point was, I understand everything so perfectly now. And my pet peeve over my religious history are ministers and any church that has adornments to the point that you're going, how ostentatious is that? Because my religious upbringing taught me that Christ threw the money changers out of the temple. But every temple I've ever been to, they pass the plate and try and convince you that 10% of what you make is what they ought to get. And I'd love that, too. Boy, that'd just be swell if y'all would all send me 10% of what you make. But it ain't going to happen, and I don't think it's right that it does, because these days everybody needs every penny they make. At any rate, I told the power that had me in the center and completely enamored with the condition of the universe and the fact that the world is perfect and everybody's exactly where they ought to be doing exactly what they need to be doing. When I had that state of consciousness, I also had this opinion that an evangelical minister with a $3,000 suit on is kind of hypocritical in that, you know, he could have a $300 suit on and send $2,700 into wheat futures for people starving to death. As long as there's an ill in the world, I don't think the church has any right to accoutrement. I think we need to get busy helping other people. As long as there's someone starving in this world, it's kind of hard to justify splendor of the magnitude that you see in the realms of some religions. It's time to start working on it. But at any rate, my heroes at the time were the people that have taken the vows of the Eastern religions, where they weren't permitted to own anything that wouldn't fit on a kerchief on their knapsack stick. And they went wherever they were led to provide whatever influence towards the good that they could. Well, I took that same kind of approach, and I started hanging out. I became what I'd like to call a Saturday night preacher. The people going to church on Sunday, they don't need any preaching at. They're already there. They're already in awe of God. They're already working on their spirituality. It's the people that are in the bars. It's the people that are doing the dark side of life activities that need some influence and attention. And through the course of time, believe me, this was all BS. to convince myself that I was doing something noble, when in reality what I was doing was putting myself in situations where I could be terrified. So I spent a good part of my life being terrified in the name of God. It's definitely not what was going on, but it is what I deluded myself into thinking was going on in order to accomplish my unconscious goals. Over the course of time, I would really like to think that I did some good, and I know of some situations where bad things didn't happen because of me, and I think that's just as valuable an undertaking as trying to make good things happen for people. So be a positive influence wherever your circumstances are is my credo. Try and influence things towards the middle, towards the light, in whatever manner you can. And just remember, God brings people together. He doesn't segregate them. He doesn't discriminate. He makes us all one. So when you hear somebody saying this or that faith is not right, I wrote a public service announcement that used that tune of that song that I played right at the first of this to say, basically, God is powerful enough to show different faces to different people and move them in the direction that he wants them to be moved. And your culture has an influence on where you start. And so wherever you start is very important to establish where you are in order to get an orientation towards where the middle is. You need to be balanced. You need to, and being a Libra, I always think that. But people go, Jim, what's your faith? You seem to wander from astrology to Christianity to Taoism to... It's all good. It's all symbols. It's all telling us the way we need to move. It's things that are working on us to move us towards the direction that we need to be headed. But don't sit in judgment of another religion. I do it frequently, quite frankly, and I catch myself at it, and I try and stop it, because people's faith is where they got their orientation on the road to becoming spiritual. And though I can make fun of a church because they're spending $250 million in legal fees and hush money, I, at the same time, can appreciate a church because of how many people it brought into the realm of thinking about God and thinking about spirituality. One of the things about Taoism that it teaches is that it always works out to the big zero. If something's doing something very, very horrible, on the other hand, there's something that's very, very good that comes from it. If somebody's doing something very, very good, then there's a little seed of the yang in that. So it will balance out, and things are like they're supposed to be. But when you see something like the situation I described, where they're spending $1 billion on hush money and legal fees and trying to keep criminals from answering to the law, at the same time, they probably brought more people into the realm of thinking about God and in the realm of trying to become better people than any other religion on earth. At some point, you have to admit that things have to change, and I don't know how far out of sync things have to be before that admission comes. But the problem is that we've been taught you can't speak about religion, you can't talk about it, and you need to be able to talk about it. You need to bring it up. You need to say, hey, I didn't know when I was putting my $5 in the collection plate when it came by that it was going to go to a lawyer that was keeping a child molester out of jail. Things like that need to be addressed. And when you start seeing things like that from an organization, then it's time to be able to talk about it. It's time for religion to be able to hit the streets and be a subject of discussion. The problem is we've got fundamentalist religious people in our world that say, my way is the only way. Well, every one of them that has the my way is the only way has a religious leader in their past that is trying to convert everybody to their point of view. It's a sales technique. They're trying to make your money go into their collection plate. So they're telling everybody in the world, oh, you can't believe that. You're going to hell if you don't believe what I believe. Or God has told me to kill you if you don't believe what I believe, in the case of some radical Islamic folks. God didn't tell anybody to kill anybody. God didn't tell anybody they're going to hell if they don't think like you. God is powerful enough to show different faces to different people, and he's moving every one of us in the direction that we need to be moved. And if you walk willingly towards the center, it's easier to get there than it is if you fight him every step of the way and think mankind is your enemy for not believing what you believe. Jay asked me last week during the course of our interview a question that I really didn't have enough time to think about. He asked me what my vision was for this whole thing. What I'm trying here is to create a forum and an organization for peaceful people to get some political influence and power so that we can vote as a bloc, so that we as a bloc can start making it more in vogue to be peaceful, to be introspective. My hero, Carl Jung, invented two words that not a lot of people understand the meaning of. They are introversion and extroversion. And a lot of people think that means whether you're outgoing or not. You know, I can get up in front of a crowd and talk, or I can get up and play a song, but I'm not an extrovert. I'm an introvert because my situation, and here's the difference between the two terms. Introvert is someone who thinks when there's a burr under the saddle that they need to change themselves. An extrovert is somebody who thinks when there's a burr under the saddle they need to change the world. So when you're confronted with a situation where you and the world aren't getting along, is your first solution to get more adjusted to the world, or is your first solution to get the world more adjusted to you and more comfortable for you? Of course, like anything in life, it always balances out to the big zero. And if you're overly one way or the other, then the balance isn't being struck. And sometimes you'll find yourself acting on the world when acting on you is called for, and sometimes you will find yourself acting on you when acting on the world is called for. That's extremely true in my case. But it's time for me to act on the world. It's time for the peaceful people of the world to act on the world. It's time for us to get some political clout and organization together. It's time for everybody that believes in God and understands our first commandment is don't kill each other, to get together and ridicule those who do and those who suggest it. If we start reeling it in from every culture and every angle, if we start getting to the point where violence is absolutely the last thing and we have great pity and empathy for someone who reacts that way, and we also understand that there's a mental problem going on for somebody who advocates that, we need to get everybody that thinks war is the way to go or that violence is the answer to any problem, we need to get them some help. So if you're like me and you think that it's time for the power in this world to go to the peaceful, if you think it's time for us to take the religious dialogue away from fundamentalists and start getting it into the realm of reality and out of the realm of blind faith, if you think it's time to start introducing sanity into the world, I hope you'll help me keep this broadcast going. I hope you'll help us with our collective charity effort. I hope you'll join the Church of the Meek. Our website is www.thechurchofthemeek.org. Our snail mail address is P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas, 78619. And I'm going to keep this up for as long as I possibly can. I sure could use and would appreciate you giving me a hand. Bye. Just one more thing. I'd really like to hear from you no matter what you'd like to speak about. If you want to send us a few bucks to keep the program going, if you want to ask us any questions, if you want my definitely biased opinion about how to make the world a better place, please don't hesitate to write www.thechurchofthemeek.org or P.O. Box 248, Driftwood, Texas, 78619.